Hey, what's going on, everybody? We are back with another YouTube's exclusive slash Spotify, and everyone will get this later. But you're here for an exclusive interview slash podcast slash recap because we're doing everything in one go because we're lazy. I'm just kidding. No, we're not. But anyways, guys, we are back with Munchie's Men, and we don't mean Munchie the snack. We mean Munchie the sporting director of Sevilla. We're here to recap last week and go about this Thursday. And with me is my good friend Dave. Dave, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing well, but we have three special guests with us tonight. We've got Steve, Eddie, and Chris from Munchie's Men. How are you guys doing? They've all muted themselves.
Okay, don't be afraid to intro yourself.
We didn't want to screw up your intro, man.
No, we screw it up all the time.
Trying to be polite there. Yeah, trying to be polite.
Yeah. Welcome back. I mean, thanks for having me back, whatever. I'll shut up. You guys met me last week, so I'll shut up and let the other guys go.
All right, keep it simple. Steve, how you doing? Let the fans know who you are.
Yeah, I'm Steve, member of the Munchie's Men Forum, big supporter of Sevilla FC. I've got some family. Married into a bunch of Sevillistas. My wife is from that city, actually. Nice. Got married over there. Kids are baptized over there. We got a lot of connections to the city, so it's kind of our home away from home at this point. And I guess that's my story, how I came to support what I think is the greatest club in the world.
Nice. That's a cool story. Eddie, we didn't really get to talk even, but I mean, let us all know who you are.
Hi, I'm Eddie from Munchie's Men. Just a diehard Sevilla fan. It's kind of a club that chose me, so kind of something I couldn't let go. I realized it more and more that I love this club because we were doing so bad this year that I couldn't watch any football except for Sevilla. I'm honored to be on this podcast. I'm a big enjoyer of Serie A football, so I appreciate you guys inviting me on here.
Ah, well, of course, the more the merrier. I'm glad we have three of you tonight. We get even more opinion, insight, and just banter overall. Eddie, am I correct? You're from Toronto?
Yes.
So I trash Toronto so much, so I'm sorry that you live there. I grew up there. I've disowned the city, except the Leafs. I still suffer every year through the Leafs. I guess, welcome from Toronto, but I'm sorry.
No worries, man. Hey, no, that's cool. The big city's not really my style either, so I take the pressure away, man.
No, the listeners know that I kind of go off on it once in a while because every time I go back, I come back angry. So
every episode.
Yeah. It's a thing. I just kid, of course. We love everyone from every city. There's tons of Juventini from Toronto. Toronto does have a Juventus Academy. So it's, I mean, just in our community, it's a pretty big city as well. So welcome, everyone. We'll just get into it. Last match. You guys made us sweat, that's for sure. I want to know from your perspective, because maybe you saw a game differently than we did.
Tell of two halves, really, right? Like, first half, we felt good, I think. I mean, we were on the front foot and just taking it to you guys. And then second half, you started getting more possession and a little more chances. Not too many, but making us sweat a little bit more. You guys started out pretty well there for the first like 10 minutes, and then after that it was just we kind of took over and had some good possession, some shots, the first goal, of course. So, I mean, from my perspective, it was awesome. Shindom hit it right on the head, you know, from the podcast, 1-1, he called it. I didn't think we would get 1-1, but there you go. We did get a goal, and that's, I think it's important to go back to the RSP with – you know, tied up. It's anybody's game at this point with no away goals anymore. So,
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
It's all on the table. Eddie, how did you feel about it?
I was very surprised how we came out away from home because we do well away from home. We're usually pretty conservative, but in the Europa League, it's something different with Sevilla. So they always show their best. So I was still surprised how well we did. But I think it was taking advantage of some mistakes from Juve. I think Juve could have done better. They were still dangerous in some parts, particularly Di Maria and Kostic. So I still think it's a tight game. But overall, I think we did really well. I know they scored late, but I was still pretty satisfied with the result.
Yeah, you make a couple interesting points. That's why I'm always interested from the other perspective, because, man, I didn't expect too much from Juve because I know how we're struggling. And I think sometimes our name carries more weight than perhaps it should. And this is, and it sounds like I'm completely trashing Juve, but I think most Juve fans know that we haven't had a great year. And we always knew that Sevilla was going to be a tough competition and it was going to be tight no matter what. I don't know. Does that seem accurate from your guys' perspective?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, yeah. I think on the last episode of the Munchies Men podcast that we recorded, I'll go on the record and admit to this. I said that Juve, I think the phrase that I used is a shell of its former self right now. And that's no disrespect, but it's one of those things where the players that you have are playing really well as a team, at least from what I've seen, but the individual talent is not what it has been in years past, which is, it's kind of hard to overcome. And that's kind of the same situation we find ourselves in Sevilla. The only difference there is that we self-imposed the 15 point penalty on us by just playing terrible in the first half of the season, instead of some financial stuff that happened with Juve. But yeah, it's just, we're two clubs that are struggling, and really anybody's game. I did not expect to come out as strong as we did. I did not expect to see Lucas Ocampos play how he did for the first 34 minutes. But the moment that he got subbed off with his injury and Montiel came on, I knew in my heart of hearts what was going to happen. And ultimately, we ran out of steam and we weren't able to capitalize on a great start to the game. That's something that, unfortunately, Sevillistas have seen time and time again with Montiel, in particular, just a pretty big drop off in play in a lot of cases. So it didn't surprise me, the outcome after he came onto the field, and I guess more accurately after Ocampos left and he came onto the field.
Yeah, we know too well having injured players come off for a not so great player come, you know, I mean, Pogba, just this past weekend, his season's done, right? Yeah, it's the worst feeling. You hate when a guy goes down, absolutely. But, I mean, honestly, up until that point, and El Nasri's goal as well, you guys completely exposed us on that play. Yeah, like, Ocampos, we looked silly.
Ocampos gave us, like, 15 minutes of pure hell. I was just sitting there. Because the thing is, like, it's interesting that you said that we're great collectively as a team, but terribly individually. Because I think... I get it. I totally get it. It's not a problem. But like, for example, for us, it's more so the opposite, where we have great individual capabilities. It's just terrible cohesion. Because like, for example, like, we'll have great skill players or great individual moments, but it's just, as far as cohesion goes, it's just not there. Because like, one of the things that I was absolutely frustrated was, you guys were giving us the middle of the pitch completely wide open to throw a through ball, and we just would not do it. We would just, you know, throw it at Kostic, throw it at Di Maria on the opposite wings, and then you guys are like, all right, cool. We already, it's like, we read the scouting report on you guys, so keep sending them to the wings. And Juve's like, sure thing, we'll do that. But tactically, it was interesting. But the one thing that I got to give credit to your guys' coach, because he read it and was like, we're doing it this way. He saw our back line was our slowest players on the squad. Three, I would say, I don't want to say geriatric, but two of them absolutely, Lissandro and Bonucci, and Danilo, again, north of 30. And when you're going up against Torres, Gil, and Ocampos in foot races, I think Bonucci is still chasing that counterattack that El Nasri scored on right now to this day. But,
and you know, now that you mention it, I think those are all our oldest players, all in our back line at once.
Yeah. Which I thought that was a terrible selection from the coach, because I had a feeling, because teams that play a 4-2-3-1 are teams that like to attack you with fast guys on the edge. Ocampos, to me, looks like that dude can run. Same thing with Brian Gill as well, and En-Nassyri as well. As those guys had pace. So I saw it. I knew what was going to happen. I saw the first couple of shots that Ocampos had right at the keeper. And I'm like, dude, we're getting way too lucky here. And then we concede, and I'm like, oh, crap. And then the thing is like, you guys didn't sit back either. You guys were just like, let's keep going. And then I think you guys lost, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think you guys lost your sting when Ocampos got hurt. Mm-hmm. Because from the second half, you guys kind of were like, okay, we can't risk too much. We need to sit back and relax here.
Yeah. I actually watched the game back today just to kind of enjoy a little bit instead of watching the Champions League games. But you're right. I mean, when Ocampos – actually, it wasn't until the second half until we started, like, sitting back a little bit more and not as pressing as high. There at the end of the first half still, after Ocampos came off, we were still pressing and causing havoc. Because, you know, in my mind, when I was thinking back to it, I was like, yeah, as soon as he went off, we were bad. But then I watched it back today, and it wasn't that at all. Like, we were still pressing, had some chances there in that 10 minutes before halftime after Ocampos came off. But it just seemed like we were pressing so high and causing so many Juve silly mistakes, just turning you guys over. And that I think that kind of surprised me. I thought you guys would be able to play a little bit better out of the back than what happened.
You would think that. Our midfield, however, has not been able to link up. Again, when we saw Pogba on the weekend for those 20 minutes, it looked beautiful. But we're missing that piece. And as long as we put a bit of a press into our midfield, we're going to give it up.
Well, and then the other thing, too, is, like, for example, we had Miretti starting in the middle of the park, which the kid's 19 and beanpoles. Like, I mean, Rakitic was eating the poor kid. So the thing, because you guys have Fernando and Rakitic, who are big bruiser experienced midfielders, where, like, for example, Miretti was supposed to be the creative outfield for the midfield, which I was, again, not a big fan of. I thought you could have been better with a Fagioli or maybe a Paredes. But the thing is again, you have Moretti there, 19 years old. Again, it's one of the biggest games of this kid's life, and just absolutely got swallowed by the Sevilla midfield.
That's the biggest game he's played.
Yeah. And then it's like, for example, again, Benucci, way too slow. Not really, again, a creative outlook. And then if you look at Rabiot is more of the I'm going to run you over kind of midfielder. He isn't like a link up of play or anything like that. He's there for, you know, garbage balls in the corner area or in the set piece area for him to just tap in per se. Locatelli, amazing defensively, great at intercepting passes, making slide tackles. Offensively, this game, I wasn't a big fan of him. Did not play really, really well. It's just the thing is what I appreciate about your guys' midfield that you guys do well. You have Fernando and you have Rakitic. Rakitic is one of the best passers as far as midfield capabilities go. Fernando, great coverage to cover any kind of defensive liabilities that come in through Rakitic. That's a great pairing. With us, when we put in Pogba, that's where we started getting that synergy because Locatelli and Rabiot are able to cover the defensive flanks where Pogba's able to just cook. But the problem is now that we lost Pogba, we're going to be relying heavily on either Paredes or Fagioli to cook or to be the conductor in the middle of the pitch because if we don't have that creative midfielder, if we don't have that midfielder that's able to facilitate play, everything goes send to Kostic, Kostic cross, and hopefully Vlahovic knows where the ball is going to land. It's usually been Juve's MO the entire season. Or like, for example, sometimes throw it out to Cuadrado and hope something happens. But the thing is now that Kostic has been doing the same thing over and over and over again, teams are starting to pick that up and understand how it works. We caught you guys a little bit off guard when we threw in Illing Jr., because I think it's just the pace that he has against Navas, especially with Navas's age. Illing's one of the fastest players in Italy, I believe. So the kid has an explosive dribble. But then again, you factor in Federico Chiesa. And then at that point, Allegri was just throwing the kitchen sink to try to get an equalizer, which I thought it was ironic that Gatti got the goal. He pushed Milik out of the way and just absolutely thumped it in, which I'm like, dude, this guy's a center back. I might as well play this guy as a number nine at this point. But it's interesting because I think out of everything, you guys have the advantage. Yes, there's no away goal. Everyone has to come to play this time. It isn't like, for example, you know, the old cliche Mourinho throw everybody inside the net and just hope it goes through. But like, it's interesting because the dynamic changes. Yes, Juve have to go to win in Sevilla to get through, but then also you guys have to win as well. It'll be easier because you guys are at home, but it's interesting because it's not going to be one of those one team sits back and the other team's throwing everything they can.
Yeah, definitely an interesting dynamic. Something to point out, that was your first shot on goal, I think, when the kid came on and scored, or not scored, but shot there. What's his name? Illing
Jr. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first shot, 64th minute, I believe it was, when that happened. And I mean, you were close before, right? I mean, early in the first half, you had that chip over with Di Maria. Might have been offside, but I mean, it was close. But Bono just saved us there a couple times there in the first half. So it could have been a different game, right? I mean, you guys score one of those early, and who knows what happens with our team.
Of course. You guys did the perfect thing, though. I mean, you get through the opportunity, and then you just bang one in the back of the net. So, I mean, it's crazy how the game works. But, yeah, for you guys had an amazing first half, in my opinion. That was probably one of the best tone setters. It stinks that, you know, we scored. For us, it's great. For you guys, it's not. But, yeah, I thought Sevilla did pretty good that game, especially for you guys not liking to play that much away from home. So
yeah, that's what surprised me.
That's the one thing. You guys came to play. I did not expect that.
I mean, that's old Sevilla, right? I mean, we're talking new manager Sevilla, who hasn't lost on the road. I mean, he's 4-0 on the road so far. So
actually set La Liga history. First manager or first team in La Liga history, going back, what is it, 75 years now in La Liga history, that has recorded 4 consecutive away victories that were also shutouts. So in every one of those matches that they've won on the road, the last 4 of them, they've been shutouts. And that's the first time that's ever happened in the history of top flight Spanish football.
Yeah,
so
some of the La Liga pundits were actually even saying that was our best best half of football, that first half that they've seen us play all year. Yeah. So kind of just shows you that we were on it. I just want to shout out on that goal. I don't think that happens if it wasn't for Torres, because if you watch that back, our midfielder that we talked about on last week's podcast about is he going to play or not, but Torres was the one that made that play happen, because he almost no-looked past to Campos out wide, who was just open in acres of space and then allowed the counter, because we're not a very good counter-attack team, or we haven't been in the past, but he opened that up so much with that little no-look pass. It kind of went unappreciated, I think, at the time. But if you go back and look at that, it was like just a gorgeous like pass to spring him. But to your point, I mean, we did our job for 96 minutes, right? And that 30 seconds of extra time, you know, scored the goal. So hopefully we can avoid that last mistake here at home and maybe pull it through. So
that is anyway. A bit of a classic Juve thing to do as well. I mean, our motto was fino alla fine, to the end. So that's sort of the mentality, is you never quit. And the kid that scored, he was playing in second division last year. They picked him up, let him play the rest of the season, put him in, had a horrible first half of the season. Completely new league, never played at this level. Then all of a sudden he started picking it up, and this guy just like bleeds the jersey. He's just, his last name's Gatti, which means cats, but he's got the dog in him. Or could be a feral cat, I suppose. I don't know. But this guy wants it so bad. And like Dash said, he pushed Milik, our striker, out of the way. And he's like, no, this one's mine. Sit down. And this is a 24-year-old up against a 30-year-old. He don't care.
So he's gonna is he gonna start this game? I guess with Bonucci out.
I'm gonna say you do.
I'm gonna probably say our projected back three is gonna be Alexandre on the left, Danilo in the middle, or no, Bremer's back. Oh, silly
Bremer.
Me.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think Gatti starts.
Or Danilo left, Gatti right. It's a possibility.
Unless Allegri decides to throw Danilo on the left, Bremer in the middle, and
he's Gatti done it on once before. Right. It worked.
He has. I don't know. Because the thing is, I'm thinking that he's going to probably go with the Brazilian back three of Sandro, Bremer, and Danilo. But yeah, I mean, the thing is like Bremer with Bremer in our back three looks totally different, because Bremer is a heat-seeking missile when it comes to challenges. The dude's got pace. He's built, man. Like if you ever see, him, don't ever look at him riding a horse, man. Guy's absolutely shredded. But there's like a video of that or a picture of him. It was funny, cause when he got transferred over to Juve, like I posted that somewhere, where he's just literally riding a horse and just yoked out of his mind. But Bremer's going to be interesting, because I think Bremer's probably going to man mark El-Nesyri the entire game. If it's what I'm thinking. But I'm really curious to see what Juve do with their wingers, because Illing's been surging recently, and then you have Kostic, who's been consistently performing this year. And then it's interesting, because I'm not really sure how they're going to go, because our coach has a knack of pulling some really, really crazy stuff in second legs. Just completely flipping scripts.
A bit of a Pep Guardiola syndrome sometimes.
No, I wouldn't say Pep Guardiola. I just
want to trash from Pep.
I know, but
let me have my moment.
I gotcha. Yeah, because, like, for example, you know, you lose 2-0 against Atletico Madrid, changes it up. Totally different style of Juve playing in that second leg, wins 3-0. Loses 3-0 to Real Madrid in the first leg, wins 3-1 in the second leg, and absolutely goes to the Bernabeu and, like, thumps Real Madrid 3-0 until, you know, Mehdi Benatia decides to kick one of their players for no freaking reason in the box, and, you know, Ronaldo penalty, they're off to the final. But it's one of those things. Allegri in knockout games does some really weird stuff, so I don't know really what to expect more so, but it'll be interesting for sure.
And just to exclaim that point to Bremer, that's going to be a big change up in our lineup. Like, that's not just, oh, Bonucci's injured and Bremer's healthy again. Like, Bremer is our number one center back this year. He has taken the crown. So defensively, it's going to be a lot harder, I think, for you guys, just because of that one switch up.
And ironically, even though Bonucci is the well-known center back out of the entire group, he is the worst one right now, skill-wise.
He's done.
He honestly is. And it's like, you know, respect to the guy, he's a Juve legend, but, like, for example, first choice is Bremer, second choice is Danilo, third choice is Gatti, fourth choice is Rugani, fifth choice is Sandro, and then the last choice is Bonucci. So it's one of those things where...
Yeah, it's gotten to that point.
Wow.
I mean, he's at the twilight of his career, consisting adductor.
36 injury. Or 36, yeah. Right?
Yep, 36 years old.
You guys were dropped pretty deep with Bonucci. I feel like Bonucci was a hindrance. He was still picking out some pretty good passes, I must say. So he was doing his best to, you know, belong. But you could tell that the pace was kind of a hindrance to the team.
He still has the technical skill. As well. Yeah, like, the technical skill's there, but he just can't keep up to the play. When you have, you know, a young El Nasseri coming at you, what are you going to do?
It's like, I mean, oh my goodness. Like, he was up at the midpoint, or he was at the half line, and I just see Ocampos blow by him, and I'm like, oh, that's it, we're conceding. Like, oh.
Yeah, no, over. You saw. It was one of those, like, you see the train coming down the tracks. Like, yeah, that's happening.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, he came off in, like, the 61st minute, and that's kind of, like, you guys started taking more advantage of us around that same time. So
yeah, because the thing is like, for example, Allegri, the thing about Allegri as Juve coach is he will not go forward if he doesn't feel that the back is secured. So, like, for example, if there's some plays that you guys do and it kind of jitters our back line, which you guys did from, like, 15 to 37 or 38, he'll essentially tell us to hunker down. Even though we're losing, he'll still pull us back to hunker down, organize the back, keep it simple until you guys try a couple of things, doesn't work, we pull you out of position, and then we start pinging some plays forward. But yeah, like, that's one of those things when he subbed Bonucci out in the 61st minute, put in Gatti, then you could tell defensively we started to look a lot better. Then you started seeing us, because, for example, we didn't really start pressing you guys until probably the 68th minute. 68th to 70th minute, where we really started coming on hard, because as far as attacks go, you guys had a little bit of an attack going in from 70 to 74, and then at the end from 89 and 90, and then obviously the goal at the end for us. So overall, because the thing that I didn't expect, which I thought was interesting, was that we beat you guys in the expected goal calculator, which I was a little bit shocked, because I thought you guys had more clear-cut chances than we did. But we were at 2.13, you guys were at 1.71. And then if you look at the overall shot calculation, total shots, 11 to your guys is 13. And then you had three big chances, a lot of them at the beginning, to R2. We missed the one clear big chance, I believe it was with Dusan. And then you guys missed the two where you hit it directly at the goalkeeper. But again, Juve having a lot of the possession is a little bit off script, because we had 429 passes to your guys is 263, 59 to 41% possession. It's really off script, because if you're giving Juve the ball, you're in for a snooze fest. I'm going to be honest with you. I love my team, but I gotta be objective here. But yeah, you guys definitely beat us on the shot counter, though. We only had two on target. You had five, seven off target to our five off target. But I thought it was interesting that we had a higher goals multiplier than you guys did, which, you know, when you're watching the game, it didn't seem that that was the case, but hey, I commentate. I don't calculate the numbers.
I mean, early on, I mean, those first few chances were scary. I mean, they were, if they were onside, I mean, they were super, super close. And well, I guess they didn't count them because I guess they were offside. But, I mean, yeah. Bono had to do that one double save. And, I mean, you weren't that far off from scoring. So, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting second leg just because I'm curious to see if those possession numbers on Sevilla's side go up. I think we like to have the ball, maybe not as much under Mendilibar, but it's going to be interesting to see if that actually goes up.
Yeah, and that's where I'm really curious because, again, there's no away goals, so that's not going to be a thing where you guys can just give Juve the ball and sit back because unless you guys want to play for penalties, which is up to you guys, but unless you guys want to play for penalties and just hunker down for a 0-0, but I doubt it. I don't expect that because you guys are a totally different team at home. So. Yeah. The thing is I'm just curious because it's interesting now when you're looking at it from a tactical point, because back then, you know, you're an underdog and you get away with a 1-1 win away from home and you come home, the game gets a lot lighter for you. This essentially kind of the 1-1 negates the first leg and it just makes this, you know, a one-all final where you guys have home field advantage more so than you have the away goal advantage because, you know, you can easily eat up an entire half. Like, say that the away goal rule still is active. You guys could easily eat up 45 minutes of killing Juve's momentum, trying to force Juve to do something or create something. Like, a perfect example of that today was Inter versus AC Milan. Inter's up 2-0, so Milan has to do something. It's not, you know, we'll get there when we get there. But, yeah now you kind of have that taken away from the game. I'm kind of curious to how you guys are going to scheme it. Are you guys going to take the ball and try to get a quick goal and then sit back? Or are you guys just going to sit back and wait for us to make a mistake? How does it work normally when you guys have control of a situation in a sense?
It's a hard question to answer. It comes down a lot of times to the players that we have on the pitch. Anybody who's followed Sevilla football over the last 2 years, is very familiar with the revolving door of injuries that we have. And that continues this week. Chris, Eddie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I haven't heard anything about Lucas Ocampos, whether or not he's coming back. He wasn't in the lineup last weekend against Valladolid, right? I don't think he played.
It's not showing up him as injured on the
yeah.
Mendilibar said he would be back.
Okay. Hadn't thought. It's been busy. But we also have two players that are, in essence, returning or returning to form and coming off of very strong games over the weekend. One of those is a creative midfielder who y'all are probably pretty familiar with in Serie A, in Papu Gomez. Yes. The other is Tecatito, who actually made his debut for the team this last Sunday after breaking his leg in August, actually scored a goal. I don't know how much he's got in him. He came on as a sub pretty late in the game and contributed. But if the three of them are healthy, we could be in for a pretty creative attacking debut or start to this game. I think we should expect to see us coming out of the gates pretty strong, similar to how we came out against y'all last week. The difference there is that it's going to be rocking with 35,000-40,000 fans. If you watched anything of the quarterfinals against Manchester United, despite everything that's happened to this team this year, the fans come out strong. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens and what comes of that.
I know your fans did such a great job. You guys confused Maguire to what team he was playing for.
Yeah, right. He's making the joke that he's probably the best center back that's played for us this year. Yeah,
I know. Yeah. Well, the thing is like, so we love to make fun of Manchester United on this channel, just because we had a lot of people tell us that Ten Hag is an absolute visionary of the game and we should have got him. And I'm like, no. So we love throwing some Man U banter every now and then, but It's interesting because, yeah, when you guys play at home, especially when you have the fans behind it, you guys take chances, you guys carry possession. I'm kind of curious, do you guys play a high line? That's the one thing I'm very curious to see how you do it. Because, like, for example, an Allegri team, a 3-5-2 Allegri team from Juve, is we suck in all the pressure that you guys have, and then we wait for the right moment where we catch your center backs in an unfortunate matchup where we throw Di Maria or Kostic or Vlahovic or even Chiesa out there. Because the one thing about Juve that is a strength, ironically, that a lot of people don't really notice that much is our bench is actually pretty solid when you're looking at it, especially on the wing play. So, like, for example, or even as the number 10 role, you have Di Maria, experienced, great passer, great dribbler. You can sub him out for Chiesa, who is really explosive and can put his head down and dribble through two or three players and out-sprint anyone. Like, for example, you have Dusan, great overall striker, great striker. And then you can substitute him for Milik, who's more of a build-up play slash header striker. Or Keane, who's, we like to call him the king of cheese goals, just because of the really, really cheesy goals he gets. The kid will shank the ball entirely, but it'll still go into the net, so... that's what you get.
I thought we were going okay. The cheese was for the Juve official, but here I thought we just called him the trash man because he always picks up.
That's
garbage.
Frankie. That's Frankie.
I like it though. He's already made the meme. So,
and then like for example, on the left wing you have Kostic, which is again dribble, beat one guy across. You have Erling Jr. then, who's an explosive left wing back that clearly isn't afraid to nutmeg a player that comes in front of him or trying to take someone on one on one with the dribble. The only thing more so, like, for example, in the midfield, you have Fagioli, a more younger midfielder that can create and open chances and score from outside the box. You can alternate that with Paredes, who's more of a conductor. With the back as well, you have Danilo, a veteran. Then you have Gatti isn't afraid to take the ball and dribble it coast to coast. He did that against Freiburg, dribbled the entire squad, took a shot, and was able to force a penalty because they needed to use their hand to stop it. There's a lot of things about Juve is their depth, more so than what their starting lineup is, because sometimes they'll swap the game out. Sometimes we'll have duds. I know we'll have duds the previous time, like, for example, when we were coming up against Inter in the Coppa Italia after it was a 1-1 draw. We had a dud when we won. I think we lost 1-0 to them, yeah, in the San Siro. So it's interesting. The one thing is I don't know really what to expect. It's more so what you guys do, which kind of causes us to react.
I know it was tied in going into the second leg against Man U, so I feel like it'll be kind of the same approach where we just go balls to the wall and just start attacking. Mendy Bar does prefer a high line when we're playing at home, so we'd have to be wary of that because our defense, to be fair, hasn't been the greatest this season. We have had some clean sheets as of late, but it's still a weak point of ours. So I expect the same approach as against, like we did against Man United, I mean. So it might be more of the same, hopefully. But we'll see. It's a one-off game, like you said. So Juve does have the dangerous players. So it's still, I feel like it's still a tight game. You guys don't have Maguire or De Gea to make those mistakes. So,
So we do have the weather that Chris provided and our AccuWeather forecaster Dave.
This is in Freedom units though.
Yeah. Sorry.
You mean whatever. American units. So.
America. I thought it was unusual. I was expecting, you know, to see like 105 degrees or something, and then I pull it up and it looks like it's going to be a very rare rain shower in Sevilla. So
that's rare because when I was there, it was a thunderstorm.
Oh really? Oh yeah. It's really rare unless it's like November.
They get
rain in November for whatever reason, but all the other times pretty dry.
I think this probably favors Juventus a little bit, just weather-wise. It's unfortunate. Like, Sevilla itself, the city, is historically, just in modern history, is the hottest city on average in mainland Europe. Temperatures skyrocket, sometimes this time of year, up to 35, 40 degrees Celsius. And then they stay there until, you know, the beginning of next season in August and July and September.
It makes sense though why they thought I was so weird in November being in shorts. Because I was obviously really cold for them at that point.
They were probably in like mink coats and like furs and like, yeah, it's so weird. Yeah.
Well, sorry, I cut you off there, Misty.
Oh no, that was all I was saying.
Okay,
that's interesting because
I was hoping that it'd be hotter. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting because they're literally what, a few hours away from the Strait of Gibraltar.
Yeah, they're about an hour away from the Atlantic and 2 hours away from the Mediterranean. But it's really dry. It's pretty much a desert. You get a lot of hot, like warm fronts coming up through North Africa.
Tunisia and them. Yep.
So
I gotcha. Well, that works for us. 78 and rainstorm. It just sounds like a typical afternoon in Torino.
That's what I was looking, man, because I was hoping it was going to be 105 and you guys just wouldn't have a chance. But
just die out. And that's 25 degrees for everyone else.
All you normal people out there. 25 degrees.
Getting back to what Eddie was saying about the high line that Mendilibar likes to run at home. He does like to do that, but I think I speak for everybody, at least from the Sevilla side on this podcast, when I did not expect him to come out with quite as high of a line as he did against Manchester United, even though he has shown a high line in the past. But I was shocked by the aggression that he and the squad came out with against Manchester United. Setting aside, obviously, I want Sevilla to win and whatnot, but I'm actually just really excited to see what he cooks up and what he brings to the pitch, because there's a lot that can happen there. And when it comes down to it, Sevillistas have not had a lot of exciting football to watch over the last 2 years or so, or a year and a half maybe. And at the end of the day, this is a game. And if we're winning or if we're losing, that is exciting. It's something that is enjoyable to watch. Like, a loss might sting, and a win might feel great, but the inverse of that has been what we're living in for so long as Sevillistas, where it's just like it's these 1-0 victories or these like 1-1 draws that are just terribly boring and not inspired football at all. And that's something that Mendilibar has brought to this squad, is like he brought him back to the basics, and the players seem to be enjoying the game more. The fans are enjoying the game more, and there's just more to cheer about in general. And there's just this air of excitement around the team that I haven't felt probably since the end of 2021 into 2022.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm still waiting for that as well.
We've been waiting for that, but I'm pretty sure he saw Maguire on the starting lineup, and he's like,
feast.
He's like, time to eat. He's like, top goal scorer for us in the first leg. Time to make him the top assist provider for the second. I'm expecting you guys to come out, to be honest with you. In my heart, I want you guys to come out because, again, that's kind of what Allegri wants you to do. But just because of that, I just feel like that's not going to happen at all. He's going to flip the script on us. But it'll be interesting because the thing is I'm kind of curious to see how your team's going to respond if we get you on a couple of dirty counters per se, and you know, we don't score but we're close. Kind of curious if that forces you guys to play a little bit back, or like, for example, say hypothetically, if we got an early goal, which we have been doing a lot in our return legs in the Europa League matches, where we get a quick goal against Nantes, quick goal against Freiburg, we actually scored early against Sporting Club Portugal, how you guys are going to react to it. So like, for example, with Juve, you guys are one of the outliers, because when we concede, finito, it's usually game over, we lose. How is Sevilla, if you guys, because you guys have been winning a lot of games recently, so there hasn't been that many much reference material, but how do you think your club will react if you guys get scored on first?
Eddie, you want to take that?
I think it helps us being at home, because if that occurred at the Allianz, they probably would have turtled and probably sit back and not try to concede more, depending on how it was going. Because similarly to what happened after we scored, there was Alexandro that had the slip, and it could have led to much worse things. It probably would have been a similar situation with Sevilla. So if we do concede the early goal, it's those next 5 to 10 minutes might be a bit rocky, but with the support of the fans there, they won't allow us to have our heads down. And, you know, nunca cederé, like they say in Sevilla, similarly to Juve, if you know La Fine, it's not over till it's over. I mean, we had a late win against Villarreal recently. I mean, even these like late victories and comebacks, we weren't seeing that under Lopetegui in the previous 2.5, 3 seasons, I guess. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing all of that under Mendilibar. So it's a very new team that you really like. It's not just a saying now. We actually believe that we could win at any moment. We could beat any team. Even if we're down at the dumps, like we have the strength in us to come back.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, there's really only been two matches where we get down early since Mendilibar joined, where we go down early and we have to fight back. One of those was against Manchester United at Old Trafford, where we were down 2-0 very early on and just were playing dead. We looked like we were going to turtle until like the last 6 minutes. And then we brought on, to steal a euphemism from you, Dave, we brought on our geriatric unit with Jesus Navas there, who has lost a step speed-wise, but the leadership he brings to the pitch is like second to none. And the energy that he brought was vital to that comeback. And then we played a couple of weeks ago against, albeit it's a relegation team right now in Espanyol, but that was a game that went back and forth multiple times and ended up with a 3-2 victory for us, something that we had to battle back and actually pulled the victory out in the 88th minute. So those are really the only two games that we were down early and we had to fight back for. Everything else that we had, like we had a draw and we've had a loss. But the loss came against a really kind of, I don't want to say overachieving because I don't want to cheapen what Girona is doing right now.
They have. I mean, we can be honest.
But they're kind of playing above what anybody expected them to do. And that came after a massive run for us where we the 3-1 or 2-0 against Valencia, 3-0 against Manchester United. Really important victories against Villarreal and Athletic Club, which are two teams that are kind of fighting for the Champions League qualification through, or at the time they were fighting for Champions League qualification through the league. And then we go into Girona, and I think we just ran out of gas at that point. And then the other one was a 2-2 draw to a team that we actually let back in towards the end of the game and not the other way around. But under Mendilibar, I feel confident that we can come back from, I don't want to say from anything. If you guys put 5 goals in us in like the first 25 minutes, like, okay, I think we can probably write that off. Let's be honest.
I would quit. I would just go on vacation because, or I would put money on it and never.
Yeah.
We've only scored 4 like twice this season.
But, I mean, 1 or 2 goals down by halftime. If that's the case, I still will be riveted in my seat watching because I feel like pretty much anything is possible with this team at this point.
Yeah, I think so too, because when Dave and I were covering Sporting and we found out that it was Man United and Sevilla, Dave and I bet 100%. I think there wasn't a moment that Dave and I weren't convinced that you guys would beat Man United, because we said it on our podcast because someone told us from our Discord, yeah, but Sevilla just fired their coach and hired a new coach. I'm like, you know, there's this thing called new coach syndrome or teams just absolutely do a 180. And you guys were a relegation battle at that time too. And now you guys are literally 1 point away from going into the Conference League, which is pretty incredible. I'm not going to lie. I know you guys are going to need some help. You need Athletic Club to drop points, Usana to drop points, as well as Girona. But I mean, they're 48. You guys are 47, and they're
hottest team in Spain since Mendilibar came in. More points than Barcelona since he started. So, just kind of shows you what kind of run we're on.
Yeah, and you guys are less memeable than Barcelona because I still think they're a joke of a club, in my opinion.
But, well, could we spend just a couple minutes, like from a Sevilla perspective, because they just won the league. No big surprise. Whatever. I don't know if you need to trash them or throw some respect for some reason. I don't know. What do you guys think about them?
Let's do this. Who do you hate more, Real Madrid or Barcelona?
He's like, yes. Both, yes. Jeez, so, that's a tough one. I mean,
is there, like, for example, is there sour relations with Sevilla folk and, like, the Barcelona and the 100% Madrid? I got you, because, like,
100% more so with Barcelona. And it's not necessarily a sporting thing. It's a political thing. Yeah. So you will find a lot more Real Madrid supporters in Sevilla than you will Barcelona supporters. And that's simply because Madrid and Sevilla are more aligned politically than Catalonia. Yeah, it's a tough conversation to have because you don't want to stir up politics, especially for politics in a country that you don't live in and you don't kind of like live the experience day to day.
I totally get it. Cause that's like, for example, the same with us in Naples, or like, for example, us in Milan, or more so like us in Naples, it's more so a North versus South Italy.
It's everyone versus Naples though.
In Naples, we call them the Bush League of Italy,
we call them Detroit of Italy.
Some people call them the Detroit. But like, for example, with Turin and Milan, it's more so like, for example, the Milano folk don't really like us. We don't like them. Also, Inter's owner essentially was the guy that owned the telecommunications company that leaked phone calls for 2006. So like, Juventini do not like Inter Milan, and we're, you know, rolling in down and punching the ground because they made the Champions League final, only to get beat by Real Madrid by 6 goals. So, you know, we'll go to bed. we'll go to bed fine. But yeah, it's interesting because I think one of the reasons why we ask is so we saw Barcelona celebrate at, I believe it was Espanyol, for winning the league. And
Espanyol's in Barcelona too, just for geography lesson. They're a city team there.
Yeah, that was a derby too. So.
Yeah, because I saw reports that a lot of people weren't really too thrilled about it. I'm like, that's interesting. I didn't know that the other La Liga teams weren't real big fans of Barcelona. But
yeah, I mean, that's from the fans' perspective. Mm-hmm. From a sporting perspective, and from the club itself, there seems to be a really good relationship between Sevilla's front office and Barcelona's front office. There's a lot of exchange of players that goes back and forth. You got
Rakitic,
Koundé, Dani Alves.
We've taken a lot of money from Barcelona over the years. Yeah.
Oh, that's like with us in Fiorentina.
Yeah, Sevilla's the Fiorentina.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it makes business sense, and we don't have that, or we don't seem to have that relationship with Real Madrid. Let's be honest, those are the two biggest clubs in Spain, we have a much more cordial relationship business-wise with Barcelona. So it's hard not to cheer for Barcelona in one aspect, because they have these players that's like
your guys,
Jules Koundé. I don't necessarily want them to win the title or win a whole bunch of things, but like it's cool to see him have success and see these players have success individually. The other guys, I'm just,
he's like, nope.
Once you leave, you're out. Yeah, I have no more love for you.
That's how I feel about Paulo Dybala, but we still have Juventini that, you know, wears jersey and support him. And I'm like, that guy's not a Juve player anymore. I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, I still have a soft spot for Koundé just because he's a good dude. But almost any other player that's left, I'm like, peace out, you know, if they go to Barcelona. Other teams, I still follow them and root for them. Barcelona, I just have no respect for their way they do business. I don't like it. I don't think it's good for the game.
What are you talking about? The camp Spotify arena now?
Levers. Got to pull all the levers. You know?
I thought for example, I'm curious to get like a Sevilla take on this from a sporting sense, not a political sense, but like, how did you guys feel when Barcelona was like selling shares of their team or like lockers to sponsors and stuff like that, just to get anything to scrape a couple of bucks? Like, do you guys just kind of sit there and be like, what the hell, man, how are we supposed to compete with this?
No, not at all. I'm actually thrilled. Yeah. I love that they're doing this. They are, from all of outward appearance, like it looks like they're just like raking in cash and they're pulling cash from everywhere else. But what they're doing is they are mortgaging their future for now. They are selling off potential earnings in the future from their it's mainly from their media arm. They're selling off a profit from their media arm over the next, what is it, 20 years, I think these media deals are going for. Yep. That's got to come back. That's got to come back to them eventually.
They're so stupid. I don't know how they're getting away with it. They're so dumb. Like they just tore down, like, well, they're starting construction on their stadium, right? They're redoing Camp Nou next year. They're going to have to play in some other facility that's not even finished yet. So they can't even play in this other facility, but they don't even have the financing to finish their Camp Nou renovations. That's not even secured. So they're far out on a limb.
They're banking on the Messi coming back home jersey sales. That's what they're doing.
Yeah. Hey, well, maybe they're still selling
Messi jerseys as it is. Like, that's, no. like they don't need him to come back. They'll be selling Messi jerseys until 2050. You know,
it's funny because, Chris, you mentioned that, you know, if Juve did any of that Serie A, I would just start ducking us points for no freaking reason whatsoever. No. You know, it's funny. So our stadium, the Allianz Stadium, we were the only, besides Udinese, the only main club, big club, that actually owns their own stadium in Italy.
It's Sassuolo, isn't it? They own their stadium?
They own the Mapai, but I'm saying, like, for example, top tier. Like, your Napoli, your Romas, your Lazios, and those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So, ironically enough, Serie A was like, oh, hey, we found some structural things. And, like, everyone's like, you guys are a sporting league. What are you guys? You guys aren't architects. We need to close the stadium for 6 months for public safety. And then, like, Juve got a bunch of other architects, non-biased architects, to say, there's nothing wrong with this stadium. Like, go.
Meanwhile, every other, like, look at the Giuseppe Meazza.
Yeah. You look at the San Siro, or if you go to the Diego Maradona Stadium, where, like, you will literally fall through at some point. It's just, it's not a matter of if, it's when.
Remember when Kevin's our guy that gets season tickets and sometimes travels.
Oh, he went to Genoa.
No,
Sampdoria's or Genoa?
Genoa, yeah. Well, they're both in Genoa. Anyways, yeah. And they had a certain aisle you had to go if you were an away fan and you wanted beer. And you got this beer from a little square in a door with a little shelf on it, like you're in a prison. This, like, plastic speakeasy. Cup of beer comes out.
You speakeasy in the stadium.
Yeah,
it pretty
much was. Yeah, the state of affairs is quite bad.
Special knock.
You know, and the thing is, and Juve usually likes to call Serie A on their BS, and now Serie A is just like, let's punish these guys as much as possible. So, ironically, even though we're 8 points clear in our top four of fourth place, we don't even know if we're going to finish top four for the Champions.
Yeah.
I love the response that your team has had to that, though. Not necessarily the club. I don't know enough about the club. I don't know, like, what's going on behind the scenes or anything like that. But I really applaud the players for putting the blinders up and not worrying about what they can't control. Like, they're getting the results on the pitch. I mean, you got the 15 points back, you're right back into the Champions League conversation. Like, very easily, you can see players without that mental fortitude that are not, like, they just kind of phone it in for the rest of the season. Like, oh, we're not going to qualify anyway. We're safe from relegation. Like, who cares? The team has responded well, like the players have, and I like that.
Yeah, and you know, I appreciate that you say that, man, because, like, for example, our own fans don't even say that. Our own fans are expecting us to challenge for the title, be in the semifinal of the Champions League, win everything. Like, the thing is like, for us, and this is one of those things where it's kind of tough with being a Juventini, is a lot of our fans came in within the 9 Scudetti. Because, like, for example, you have some of the OG folk like Dave and myself and some others, but, like, you know, Ronaldo, Paulo Dybala brought in a bunch of younger fans, which is good because we're growing. But the problem of it is you can only grow, you know, like, the thing is like, they don't know the other times or the hard times of what Juve has gone through. And now it's just like, oh my gosh, this coach is terrible. We're playing bad, blah, blah, blah. And it's not, because the thing is with Juve, since 2018, we've had pretty poor management from the sporting directors, from Fabio Paratici and then Cherubini. And we still technically don't have one right now. We still don't have a director. Technically right now, Allegri is the highest person in the totem pole and he's the coach. So I give him credit, man, because, you know, you're in January and they dock you 15 points. And then, you know, we still climbed our way up to nearly qualifying for top four without the 15 points. And then they gave it back to us And now we're, you know, comfortably in second place. We're only 3 points ahead of Inter. But as far as Champions League qualification, if we beat Milan in 2 weeks, we have essentially sealed up top four. But it's interesting because I got to give it, because our team squad composition wise isn't the greatest. A lot of players are playing out of position. A lot of players are trying to fill in roles to fill in gaps and holes, which isn't really suited to them. Like, for example, Chiesa's not a center forward, but he's playing as a center forward. When you look at, like, for example, Di Maria as well, Di Maria's trying to occupy the center forward role. Danilo and Alexandro are respectively fullbacks that have switched into the center back role so we can play with a back three. It's a lot of things like that. Or, like, for example, Juan Cuadrado's on his last legs, but he's still playing as a right wing back. So
Locatelli forces a regista.
Yeah, Locatelli forces a regista as well. So I give credit to these guys. I mean, like, again, with the obstacles that we had, we still have a 21 wins, 6 draws, and 8 losses. Yeah, the losses aren't great. We've lost a lot of games that we probably should have won. But at the end of the day, I mean, you have 69 points, and you're in second in your league. I mean, it's, yeah, you're not winning a title, but we're in the semifinal, and we're playing against the Baba Yaga of the Europa League in Sevilla. Take things into perspective. Like, for example, when I saw the bracket, when it was us, Sporting, and you and Manchester United, I'm just sitting here, I'm like, man, this sucks, because we got the worst bracket possible. Like, I'm going to be honest, because
That's so funny, though. It's weird, though, because, I mean, you know, a $490 million market value for Juventus compared to our, well, currently $209 million. Like, you shouldn't feel that way, but for some reason...
We have
that clout, right?
We respect you guys for what you've done, because you guys have come in, you have dismantled great Ajax teams of total attacking football. You made Manchester United look like a bunch of school kids. I'm going to be honest, especially that second leg.
They are a bunch of school kids.
They are. The thing is, there was always that meme in like the 2010s where it's like Sevilla goes into the Champions League, finishes third, wins the Europa League. For example, for us, being in the Europa League isn't our turf. And yeah, we can come in, bang our chest and say we're Juventus. It's kind of being a little bit ignorant to the teams that, like, for example, thrive and live in this competition. You guys, I mean, Europa League knockout stages, you guys just, that's your 9-to-5 shit. Like, that's not a hobby. It is. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful
sense. No. We take that with pride. I mean, it's not something we're going to shy away with. I mean, would we love to be in Champions League and winning every year? Yeah, of course. But, I mean, we know, I think that's something with Sevilla fans. We know where we are, right? Like, we know we're a smaller club team. We don't have the finances that other people do. We have to buy low, sell high to even survive as a club. So that's what I think I like about our fans more than anything, is we know where we fit. And sure, we want to strive to be better, and we are very demanding, but we understand our club. And I think we're one of the more knowledgeable fan bases about where our club is. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Barcelona fans are
still up their asses. I'm going to be honest with you, even now.
Yeah, but they're always, you know, like you were kind of saying earlier with some Juve fans, like they want them to be champions every year, and they don't want any kind of down year. But that's what Barcelona needs. They need a couple years of finishing probably mid-table, you know, go back to their academy, let those guys develop and then come up. But you know, that's why I love this club. I love being the kind of underdog all the time and coming in and just knocking giants off the table. And yeah, hopefully we can do that this coming Thursday again, you know?
Well, and the thing is, so the one thing that I really respect Sevilla is Sevilla is what, like, for example, a Roma, a Lazio, or a Fiorentina should be in Italy. Like, for example, you have your Champions League clubs, Real Madrid, Barcelona, and sometimes Atletico Madrid, that they go out and they cook there. Like, that's their bread and butter. Where it's like, for example, you guys, your bread and butter is this Europa League. You've gone there. You've won it the most amount of times. It's easy for you. We don't have that. Like, for example, we have a Lazio and Roma fans thinking that they can hang with the big boys in the Champions League, where they can't. Lazio can't even handle the Conference League. They got embarrassed in the first round. Where it's like, It's good for leagues. And one of the reasons why Spain was so dominant, especially during the glory days of Real Madrid and Barcelona. Yeah, you can argue it's Ronaldo and Messi bringing in the money, but it was also you guys locking up the Europa League as well. Real Madrid three-peated in the Europa League. You guys three-peated in the Europa League. And it got to the point where the Supercopa was either Real or Sevilla at that point. Like, who's going to win it? But like, the thing is, and I hope your fans never take it for granted with like, how crucial you guys are for La Liga, that like a lot of people don't understand that, because you're a talent pipeline, but you're a competitive talent pipeline as well. So not that many clubs can do that. Like, for example, maybe Ajax is one of those clubs that essentially can be a talent pipeline, but still be competitive. But at like Juventus, there's no club that's like that. Like, yeah, we poach players from Fiorentina, but Fiorentina is not competitive in any sense. They don't compete for anything. It's just, you know, all players that go into Fiorentina are like, all right, whatever, let me just wait until Juve come calling and then we'll go to Juve. Where it's like with Sevilla, these players are taught how to win in Europe. They're taught how to compete with some of the best players. Might not be world-class as Champions League players, but like, for example, you'll have like a Rakitic that'll come in, play in Sevilla, get the experience of playing in European competition, then go up to Barcelona and then absolutely dominate. It's one of those things where it's just like, I think as a club, you guys have probably one of the most crucial roles in propelling La Liga forward.
That's a very interesting perspective. Like, I've never really kind of thought about the importance of the team being that, but I mean, you're right. We've kind of got away from that a little bit in the last few years. And I think that's probably the reason we're struggling there in the first part of the season, is we kind of got away from our roots. And I think you'll see in the summer that we kind of strive to get back to Sevilla of old, looking for new young talent. It's been tough with the EPL just buying everybody.
It is. And,
right?
You know,
it's tough.
It's the same thing with us too. We went off script when we spent, you know, the entire mortgage on Cristiano Ronaldo. We spent, you know, we had him for 3 years making 60 million gross. That was ridiculous. And then we also paid Real Madrid 120 million off rip. So we easily spent 300 to 400 million on just Ronaldo alone. Where Juve, again, we do budget transfers. We have a counterattacking system. You know, we bring in a Matuidi that we make use of him for a couple of years. We bring in a Pjanic for 30 million. We make it work. We bring in Paulo Dybala for 32 million. We weren't flashy Juve. We weren't buy, you know, 100 million euro players. Like, it just wasn't our MO. Even back then, like, we bought Zidane when Zidane wasn't at the peak of his powers. He was good, but wasn't world-class Zidane. We brought in a young Del Piero. We brought in a young Buffon that was lighting it up in Parma, but wasn't world-class. We went away from that, from the budget, the strategic budget buys, to the more flashy buys. Like, for example, Ronaldo, De Ligt, Aaron Ramsey. We look at, even you can argue Rabiot, because Rabiot had one good season out of four, which is, you know, not really ideal. But you have a Rabiot. You have a Kulusevski who doesn't even play on the team anymore. You have Denis Zakaria who doesn't play on the team anymore. Like, you have a bunch of players that just aren't there anymore for it. So it's, with Juve, it was poor sporting decisions, because the thing is what Juve tried to do was they tried to be a Real Madrid. There's no other club that can do what Real does. They are, hands down, financially, how they run things, how they do things, no one can touch them. They can buy whoever they want on a whim. Unless you're PSG, you just buy players just to take ugly L's in the round of 16. But it was one of those things where we got away from our basic DNA, where I'm hoping with this new director that's coming in, Guntoli, who was the sporting director for Napoli, who built Napoli from 2016 till now, by doing low budget transfers, by getting players that fit the system, to grow players into it, kind of what Juve usually were about, because Juve weren't about being flashy or buying flashy players. Because even Dusan Vlahovic, his price tag, 85 million, and the guy hasn't broken 20 goals a season. That's huge. I know fans and people can blame the coach on the system. But at the same time, and this is what kind of irritates me about the modern football fan, is they're more inclined to blame the coach for some players' shortcomings than they are to say, hey, this player just doesn't have the skill. I think we took an L. I think it busted. But, it's interesting. But hopefully one day it looks like we're starting to get back on that upward trajectory, but hopefully we'll get back up there.
Yeah. That's a good conversation, definitely.
Well, Dash, I think last podcast I was the closet Sevilla fan. This one, you're definitely the closet Sevilla fan.
Hey, look, I did some research. I kind of looked at it, and it's just, you know, I like to call spades a spade, man. It's not like, and you know, it's kind of how our channel is. We're not going to sit there and be like, oh, Sevilla, these guys mid-table, blah, blah, blah. No, man. Like, the thing is it's the beauty about football is where we can sit there and learn about a different club, how they operate, how they do things. Clubs are going to be different. Like, for example, I would rather sit in a table with a Sevilla fan than I would with a Barcelona fan. Because, for example, for me, someone that's a Sevilla fan genuinely knows and loves Sevilla and they know about it, because Sevilla isn't known for their crazy marketing. They don't have commercials plastered all over the place. Like, if I go to a sports store, there isn't going to be Sevilla merchandise unless I order it online to get it there. So, like, for example, if I'm sitting and I'm sitting across with a Sevilla fan, it's always going to be a great conversation, way better conversation than a Barca fan or Real Madrid fan. And I'm not saying that, you know, they're terrible people or anything like that, but it's the same thing if I were to look at, like, for example, if I look at a Cremonese fan in Italy, or if I look at an Empoli fan, where it's like those people love their club, but there's things about their club that they love. So it's always in tune for a better conversation versus, like, for example, again, if we're talking to a top team, because with the marketing and how marketing is nowadays, anybody can be a Premier League fan.
So like our own fans. Yeah. I think we have to mention a lot of our own fans as well.
Yeah. And Arsenal fans. I can't believe, I feel bad for those guys. Talk about bottling.
Oh man.
We all knew that was going to happen.
I know.
Man. So this game, I felt good yesterday, but as it's getting closer and as Dash basically just praises the team as like the next coming of Christ here, I'm starting to get a little worried.
I've been worried. That's all I'm going to say. The second they beat Man United, I knew it was coming. I'm like, crap. They are. It's the Baba Yaga of the Europa League. They are the boogeyman.
But guys, remember, like the last podcast you were saying, like it doesn't matter. Like Juve's always plays better away in the Europa League, right?
They
like,
do.
So, I mean, you've got a chance. It's going to be, I mean, the fans for Sevilla are billing this as welcome to hell is kind of what they're saying. It's going to be an all red out this time.
Wow.
And you guys are in for it as far as the fans go. Let's see if the team has that same mentality. But
the fans can do a lot, though.
The fans are going to show up. I mean, that's what they do. We even heard it in Juve. I was going to mention this earlier, but I mean, I could hear our fans over the Juve fans right after that goal, even a little bit before the goal. But
going into halftime. Yeah, going into halftime, the whistles and the jeers from the Juventus fans and then the Spanish chanting from the small contingent of Sevillistas there.
Yeah, I could hear our fans chanting very loudly throughout the game.
We have strict stadium rules for a lot of our home fans. There's
oh really?
Yeah,
and they don't apply to the away fans.
They don't apply to the away fans.
I mean, you don't want that structure to fall down because of the architectural rules, right?
Allegedly.
Well, I have to run here. I got to take my daughter to soccer practice. But thank you for having me on here. I'm really excited about this. Dash, you mentioned that Sevilla's kind of pulled themselves up from within 1 point of a European qualification. That's true, but we're really only 2 wins away from Champions League play as well in this competition too. So there's everything to play for, and I'm really excited to see what happens on Thursday, and it was really nice to get to know everybody. I hate to just like duck out of here, but I gotta
take the kid to the soccer.
Yep. Future Sevillista. Steve, what's your prediction?
Honestly, I have no idea. Like, it's one of those things where
everybody hates that.
No, like it could be like a 2-2 draw that goes to penalty kicks, and if it goes to penalty kicks, I think honestly we have a pretty good chance. With the goalkeeper that we have, he's shown time and time again that he can come up big in both club play and in international. I mean, he was on display at the World Cup with Morocco. So I think that we have a kind of a leg up there. But like I said, it all comes down to who we have kind of starting on the attack. If Ocampos can come out strong like he did, and if we can bring in Tecatito, if he's easing back into things, or if Papu Gomez comes back in and is playing creatively, I honestly could see this going another 3-0 like we did against Manchester United. There's nothing that I've seen that would make me think that that's out of the realm of possibility. But also, like, I've been watching this team for the last year and a half, and in the back of my mind, there's just this sinking feeling that, like, all good things come to an end. So, it's hard for me to get my hopes up. I think that's a sentiment that's shared across a lot of the community right now. And especially with the season winding down, we don't have a coach for next year yet. Our current coach has not been signed past, I think, June 30th, when everything else ends. So there's a lot that's up in the air. We've got a lot of quality players that are on loan to us right now that will be going back. We don't have any kind of options to buy there either. So there's a lot that's up in the air. And so there's a lot to be excited about, but there's also a lot that is kind of concerning. So we'll see what happens.
All right, cautious optimism. That's usually my approach.
Yeah.
But we won't hold you up anymore. We don't want to disappoint your daughter. So please take care, Vern. Thank you so much.
Nice to meet all of you.
Take care.
Hopefully it's not snowing in Wisconsin.
Just got to hit the leave studio button.
Leave studio button. All right, I got it.
Yep. See y'all. See you, Steve.
Have a good one.
He definitely hit the nail on the head. Like, I think we all have that kind of in the back of our mind. It's all going to come crumbling down very soon. So I want to be like, I feel very positive going in, but you never know. We've never lost, right? Like, in this competition, once we got to the stage. So that's something that it's always in the back of my head. Like, man, there's always that first time, but
I hate those stats so much.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, I don't know. I mean, you know, the pundits and everybody's going to want that Roma-Juventus final. And I hope that doesn't happen.
I don't know
right?
how exciting that's going to be, though, to be fair.
Really?
It's Mourinho.
It's Mourinho in the final.
It's Mourinho.
I mean, as a neutral, I think probably more exciting than Sevilla going again. But
I don't know. I have my biases, perhaps, because I know Roma's... They have their moments. I won't take that away. They've had obviously a very good season. They're typically not doing this well, not in the recent years. So, yeah, they're firing when they need to fire, but sometimes they're crap.
Yeah, you get the underlying story too of Roma Monchi, right? Like, Monchi left Sevilla to go to Roma, so you've got that kind of like underlying story as well. So, assuming Roma comes out, you never know.
They're one up to Bayern by Bayer Leverkusen, so away from home now. We'll see. Yeah, that's still a pretty open game as well.
Sure. Yeah, but anyway, I don't know. I'm gonna say we win because I don't know any other way in the Europa League. So, 2-1 victory for Sevilla.
All right, Eddie, what are your thoughts on it?
I have a similar scoreline, 2-1. I'm always nervous when it's these big teams with a lot of history. But the Europa League has given us that opportunity to face all these wonderful teams, like Liverpool and Inter in the previous final. I thought we were losing that one. Just
you said wonderful teams, and you mentioned Inter.
I know. Inter and wonderful don't come in the same sentence. No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry. Apologies.
As I go to check the score line.
Yeah, they won one.
I mean, stacked teams. That's what I meant. Like, okay. Inter was stacked. That was a Champions League team that they had to win that game, but they didn't. I mean, that's the Nerazzurri for you. But, yeah, Man United in the previous round. So teams that normally we wouldn't have a chance against or less of a chance against. So to face Juve and in this scenario, it's another scenario where it's like, bring it on. I believe in our stadium. The record is daunting. It comes down to one match. Anything could happen, but I have the utmost confidence in that stadium. I don't see any other result happening. If it does, so be it. That's the game. But I just hope it's entertaining.
I don't want to go to penalties, though. I mean, for whatever Steve said,
But for the spectacle, I guess for the neutrals, they still enjoy that. As nerve wracking as it is, I mean, look at the World Cup final. But for the neutral, that's great too.
So Dash, are you changing from yesterday, or are you locking in?
Well, what did I say yesterday? I totally forgot.
You said 1-0.
Oh,
he's a Sevilla fan now, though. He has to adjust.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh my goodness, Juve will call me and be like, "Yeah, you're fired." No, I don't think I do. I think it's going to be a 1-0 game for both. Either, I think the scoreline is going to be a 1-0, maybe a 1-1. I don't see it going past one, unless Sevilla get an early goal and absolutely run rampant and we fold. But even with us, I don't see us scoring more than one goal away from home. We just haven't been solid away from home recently, besides maybe just the Atalanta game. But Atalanta just haven't shown to be anything decent right now. They've kind of taken the tumble. So I'm not too crazy right now with getting more than one goal away. So I think it's again, snooze fest. You get one and then you sit back and park it. That's what I think Allegri is going to do. If we go into penalties, I think that's Chesney's bread and butter. Chesney has the best penalty save percentage in all of Europe as a goalkeeper. He even thumped Messi in the World Cup. That was the only penalty that Messi missed was against Chesney. So I think it's low scoring. I would love to see us win. The thing is like, if I took off my Juve glasses and said, okay, I think Sevilla's probably got a 70-30% chance to win this. But again, my Juventino glasses on right now, put these on. I'm going to say it's 50-50. I think whoever scores first dictates what happens. I think that's going to be my prediction. I can't give you guys a solid prediction.
For sure. I did see the betting lines. It is in favor of Sevilla having the home advantage, but it is pretty close. It's like,
yeah.
2.8 odds to 3 odds, something like that. It's very close.
It's going to be whoever scores first.
But now this is where I took an angle yesterday anyways when we were talking about it. I said a 3-2, which seems crazy, but this is where it would work. Is early goal, quick reaction. It's 1-1. All of a sudden, the team starts scrapping it out, and we get a game that turns into a lot of goals, something like a 3-2. So off chance, but I'll throw my money there. That's got to be like a 10-1 odds or something, right? You got to give me the betting line on that one. I'll take the high scoring match 3-2.
But who? That's interesting. What's the goal? Do you know what the goal scored line is? What Vegas is predicting on the?
I can pull it on the goals on the FOT or let's just look it up. All right, Vegas odds via Juventus.
I mean, I could see a 3-2 game easily. Like, I really could, especially after what we did this weekend. Like, it's possible. I didn't think we could do that, you know, 4 months ago. But now I think very possible, right, Eddie? Like, could you see that at all, like a 3-2?
I know it's 3-2, crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. European semifinal. It's players show up in big games like this. So you'll see things that you're not used to seeing.
Not giving me the over under here. I don't typically go to these sites, but
yeah, I don't either.
It's a plus 140 for Sevilla, I'm seeing, and a plus 205 for Juventus. So again, Sevilla's more favored to win. Probably just, I don't know. I guess the history, home field advantage. I'm worried. I think the sentiment, regardless, is none of us have an idea. We're all talking out of our ass. We're all like scared shitless.
We don't know shit.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's going to be a great fight. I hope it comes out amicable. That's one thing I did love about our last match against Sporting is that it was very, I mean, the content creators that we were with last time were great. You guys as well. It's been very good on our end, but also on the pitch. Like, I don't want anything messy happening here. There's no need. I think these are two classic teams going in a classic tournament. Let's just play this out on the pitch.
Freddie Tecatito is going to score the winner tomorrow. Actually, he's not because he can't play, right? Like, he wasn't in the roster, so he can't play.
But, oh, that's right. That's right. Sorry, Freddie. Or Frankie?
Frankie.
Anything Mexican fanboy. So.
Yeah, Frankie, go back and look at Tecatito's goal from this weekend. You'll be very happy to see that.
I'm surprised he hasn't put it up in our Discord already. But otherwise, I think we've covered it all. This was a great two sessions. Do you guys have any last thoughts before we sign this off? Any feelings?
Just for best of luck, kind of, right? But no injuries.
Kind of, but not really.
Yeah, I mean, no injuries. That's the only thing I wish for. I want a 100-100 game, you know, our best versus your best, and let's see who comes out on top. That's what I want to see. I think it's going to be a good game. I enjoyed the last match, really. Even watching it back today was just a very enjoying to watch, except for that last 30 seconds. So hopefully the ref blows the whistle on full time this time.
Yeah, you never know with these guys. It goes both ways for us as well. Eddie, my man from Toronto. Pardon words.
See you guys in the Champions League next year.
Oh, buddy. Love it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that would be great if we meet again. And if we do meet again, I'll be calling you guys.
Awesome. Sure. All right. That's awesome.
Right on. Nice. Guys, thank you so much for listening in. Dash, or you know what? We always offer to our guests the outro. Now, Eddie's the newest guy here. Do you want? You think you got an outro in you? We put some cheesy music on, some lo-fi. You just got to walk us out of here.
All right.
You up for that?
All right. Let's go. Let's do it.
All right. Here's the beats.
All right. You've been tuned in to the Turin Giants and Monchi's Men classic on this preview of the second leg going down at the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan. Messing this up. Joined in by Dash, by Dave, Chris, and Eddie, signing off. Arrivederci.
Ooh, nice. That was fancy.
Love it. Fancy. And to Steve as well, and Shen from last week. Love you all. Thanks for listening.